We'll serve up part three of our good amateur practice refresher in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Larry McGlore, KB9DIP, with the Rain Report. Public service is the cornerstone of amateur radio's long-term survival. If you have participated in a public service event, you likely have encountered poor communications between the event organizers, a net control station, and/or the ham participants. There are ways to avoid many of these incidents. Tony Pezzola, W2BEJ, is a former ARRL Section Emergency Coordinator for Eastern New York. He has developed some strategies for getting the most cooperation from the non-hams involved in these events. In the third installment of our Good Amateur Practice Refresher Series, we'll hear an excerpt from a talk given by Tony during the 2011 Dayton Hamvention Techniques of the Best Operators Forum, moderated by Mitch Stern, W1SJ. Here's Tony.
We have to remember one of the golden rules Mitch said at the beginning. The reason ham radio exists is for us to provide a public service in the event of an emergency or even a non-emergency. Our public service is what keeps us alive. It keeps us from getting our frequencies taken away and everything else. Our second thing is we have to remember when we are working for non-hams, we are literally working for them. We are not running the event. We are only providing the service that they require. And the service that they require is constantly changing. Many years ago, going back into the 60s and 70s of the Vietnam War, one of the greatest things ham did was to relay messages to the servicemen overseas. Well, now with the event of the cell phone service, we don't have to do that anymore. We provide a more unique situation. We have to provide what they require. And that takes a special effort because sometimes we know a good way to do things or a better way to do things, and they're not quite up to our speed yet. We have to kind of set back and let them do their things. I can tell you a couple of funny stories. Puts it all into perspective. Mitch mentioned about accuracy. Enunciate, talk slow, be precise. Very important when you're in emergency situations, because now you have people and organizations that are not hams depending, very importantly, as to what you say and what you do. And we had a ham recently from New York, went down to help out with the floods down in Louisiana in the Mississippi River. Unfortunately, he had a jealous wife that wanted to know what he was doing all the time, where he was, who he was with, and the only way to keep her appeased was he would send her messages. And he got down in some areas, and there's no way to communicate. Cell towers were down, the areas had no power, and he was in a FEMA team that was like the first people in. So he got on one of the ham radio nets and sent the message. And it was kind of a joke to his wife. The message read, "Having a great time, wish you were here." The message got back to the wife exactly as he sent it, except the last E was left off. One dit was left off. And the wife got the message, "Having a great time, wish you were her." So you got to be precise. Roles change all the time. I do a lot of work for Mars, and I do a lot of work for the Red Cross, Salvation Army. I'll hit you with the second funny story. Everybody here has flown in an airplane. Everybody knows what TSA is, right? They can communicate amongst themselves, but you know that TSA cannot talk from airport to airport. They have no means of communications to go outside of that airport. They realized that they needed some type of communications, so they decided they were going to utilize the Mars people, the military affiliate or the military auxiliary, and have some of their key agents become Mars member. This way they could set up an HF station at the airport and then in times of emergency be able to communicate back and forth. One minor glitch. In order to be a Mars operator, you have to be a ham first. So now there's a whole bunch of TSA brass. I mean, I'm talking epaulets and gold stars and badges and stuff. They had to get their ham license. So they assembled 24 of the top brass of the TSA in Albany, New York, all over the Northeast, to be the first group to get their technician class ham license and then apply for their Mars. Their mistake was they called me to administer the exam. Because I deal with these people all the time, not only TSA, but other people. So I went in to give the exam, and I had a friend of mine with me. We had a big Rubbermaid gray bin. In it was all the exams, the answer sheets, the keys, the pens, the papers, all the stuff needed to give the exam, the successful completion things. So he says, I'm sorting out the papers. Tell them what's going to happen. So I looked at him and I said, this looks like the Pentagon here. These guys are all brassed up and everything else. They're all sitting at attention, all ready to take this exam. They're all gung-ho. I said, you know, these guys could be Marine generals. Then realizing who they were, I looked around and I said, can I have your attention, please? I'm about to give the exam for technician class amateur radio operators, as authorized by the Federal Communications. Before I can begin, I want each and every one of you, please take off your shoes. Put all your personal belongings into this gray bin. If you have any liquids more than 3 ounces, I want in a clear... The room went silent. And when the first person bent down to start taking off his shoes, I said, no, that's not required, but part of it, I just want you to see how it feels. They all laughed and they all passed, and we now have a nice HF station set up at the airport, and we do exercises and everything else. I also work heavily with the Red Cross. The Red Cross is one of these organizations that's got paperwork and forms for everything. But one of the good things is they're usually the first people on the scene. When you get a bad tornado and there's nothing left, there's no power, there's no water, there's no cell phone, there's no computer use, there's no internet, there's no nothing, they come in with a van called an ECRV. They pop up that satellite dish, they aim it to the satellite, which connects to an area that's not affected. Now we got a broadband signal. We can issue computers, cell phones, radios, VOIP, and everything else. We brought that whole area technically back online. But again, working with the non-hams, FEMA, State Emergency Management, the ARES, RACES people, you got to conform. So everybody does it different. Everybody has their own way of doing it. Now we have a new thing. There's a national group, Homeland Security, that wants everything to run under NIMS. So everything is running the same. The terminology is the same. Everything is common to one another. But the important thing is jumping through these various hoops gets you to become a better operator because you have to now go with the flow. You have to improvise. And that helps you learn how to get yourself in and out of different predicaments. They come up, they don't know how you're going to get the message through. They just want to know, we need 50 more cots. Get the message through. And that's the way to go. So working with emergencies, with non-hams, with various agencies is very important. It's almost like working a contest. You have to practice. You have to exercise. You have to get routines so they're second nature to you. Very important to be able to work good with the non-hams.
Public Service Net Controller Mitch Stern, W1SJ.
So to sum up public service and emergency communications, we've got a bunch of questions and there's no right or wrong answer, but it's just like thinking type questions. So the first one, if you're called into action, is your equipment ready and your batteries charged? Well, of course, it's a flea market weekend. You probably have all that stuff ready, but normally you're ready to roll. I checked my battery last night. It wasn't charged. Oh my God, I better charge this thing because I'm going to need it all day. But I hear a lot of people, my HT's not charged. I'm not ready. If power and phone were out for weeks, would you be able to communicate? Would you be able to charge your batteries even? Can the repeater that you use and it's part of your whole emergency plan, can it stay on for over a week without commercial power? We learned a big lesson with that big blackout in the Northeast, which started out here somewhere out in Cleveland and went all the way across New York. And fortunately, somebody in Vermont wasn't asleep and kicked out the plug before we went down too. So we got to see the whole thing on TV. They had all these ARES and emergency RACES repeaters all through New York City and state. And they all kicked on to battery backup and they all lasted about 4 or 5 hours and they all subsequently died because there was no more battery. So what's the plan? In fact, the ARES repeater didn't even have a battery. People were trying to talk to each other on simplex. It was a real mess. Do you have ways to power your radios and charge your batteries without power? Well, I'll charge it off the car. Well, do you have ways of getting gas into the car? And the big one here is, would you be emotionally able to help if a disaster struck your area directly? Generally, the answer is no. That's why they have jump teams come in from out of the area into a stricken area because you're dealing with kind of like your family and the fact that, you know, your house has just floated downriver or something like that. So that's the whole business with emergency communication.
These were comments of Public Service Net Controller Mitch Stern, W1SJ, and before him, Tony Pezzola, W2BEJ, a pro in dealing with non-hams involved in public service events. Both spoke at the 2011 Dayton Hamvention. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2012 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Larry McGlore, KB9, DIP.